deposited it on your doorstep.
What?
Cormac glanced up to see that Megan had followed him and was standing close.
Yeah, Riley continued. My cat sometimes brings home dead birds and baby rabbits, but this is quite a bit, bigger. I've called sanitation to come get it, but you'll want to use the back door for a while.
Cormac had heard enough. He put the receiver back in its cradle. Then he took Megan's hand, ignoring how much he enjoyed the feel of it, and pulled her out of the bedroom and through the hearth room to the front door. Cormac flung open the door and a sweet, sickening smell rushed into the cabin. Megan took a step back.
Shit. Is that... Oh God, I'm gonna be sick.
She slapped a hand over her mouth. There, on his doorstep, was another mutilated Dina She. But this one was male and barely full grown, his khaki pants shredded and soaked in blood.
Get me something to wrap him in,
Cormac said without looking at her.
There's an extra sheet on the shelf in the bedroom.
Megan rushed out of the room and came back just as quickly.
What's going on?
It's a message.
From the person you're hunting?
Aye.
Cormac shrouded the body with reverence, wrapping the sheet and tucking in the end. Then he looked up at her, and his gaze dipped to her neck.
Jesus, Megan. Are you feeling okay? Your rash is coming back.
It is?
Megan's hand rose to her throat. Yes, it definitely was. He could hardly believe there might actually be something to his theory, but he'd have to wait and think on that later.
Put your shoes on. You're coming with me.
What? Where?
To bury the body. It wasn't like he was just going to leave her here alone. Megan looked down at the wrapped form on the doorstep, and her skin turned a pale shade of green.
I'd rather...
Megan. He needed her to come with him, and he didn't have time to argue.
Shouldn't you call the police or a coroner?
We can do that later.
You're not telling me something. I'm not going anywhere until you tell me what's going on.
Cormac grimaced. He could see it in her eyes. The doubt, the fear, the revulsion. She'd realized he wasn't a bounty hunter, at least not in the normal human sense. If she needed some time to gather her wits so she could listen to what he had to say, he could give that to her. This wouldn't take long. He could be back in less than an hour. Then he'd lay all his cards on the table.
Get the salt, he said.
Salt? She asked, her eyebrows drawing together. Then she glanced down at the body.
Why?
Just get it.
Megan shook her head in disbelief, but she went to the kitchenette and came back with the novelty salt shaker in the shape of a Dominican friar with chubby pink cheeks.
Is this what you want?
She thrust it in his direction.
Yes, he said, but he held his hands up and didn't take it from her.
He'd stayed clear of that evil little monk since moving in, and he wasn't about to touch it now. Sprinkle a line of salt along the windowsill, then along the back door off the bedroom. All the windows in there too.
What the hell is going on?
Her voice was going higher and more panicky by the second. He closed his eyes and sighed.
Just do what I said. I don't have a lot of time. I can explain better when I get back.
She glanced down nervously at the body, then rushed out of the room with the salt. When she came back, her face was scrunched up with an expression of confusion.
Okay, good, he said.
If she wouldn't come with him, at least this would give him some tiny bit of comfort. When I leave, lock the front door and salt it as well. Don't answer the door to anyone but me. And for the love of Danu, stay awake. His concerns about angry Lanon hadn't left him.
But
she was looking at him like he was crazy. He felt a little crazy. When I'm done, I'll come to the back door. That's how you'll know it's me. She pinched her lips together and agreed, but only reluctantly.
Just tell me what message you think this body is supposed to send.
Whoever did this, depositing the body on my doorstep, he knows what I'm doing, and he knows where I am. He's taunting me.
Cormac watched as Megan swallowed hard, then nodded her head.
You sure you don't want to come with me?
She closed her eyes and shook her head.
A single tear escaped the corner of her eye. All right. Don't worry. I'm going to bury the body, but I'll be back. It won't take me long. 30 minutes. Tops.
Okay, she said.
Cormac tipped his head and his eyebrows came together. You're sure?
You'll come back.
He took that as a question needing confirmation.
Aye. You can trust me.
She nodded.
I thought so.
Cormac felt the weight of those words somewhere deep in his gut.
She trusted him.
No one had reason to trust him, but she did. Megan gave her chin a jerk to say, Get going then. And Cormac lifted the wrapped body in his arms and stepped out.
Lock the door, he said, giving his final instructions. Salt the threshold when I leave. Then stay put. Stay awake.
And put some cream on that rash. It's getting worse.
And you be careful.
Cormac looked at her for another long second. Then slowly she closed the door. Only when he heard the lock did he close his eyes. And then he was gone.
Chapter 10. Megan. Megan pressed her hands against the door and let the last few minutes sink in. She would have liked to have made sense of it, but it was beyond her comprehension. The only thing that was clear, Cormac's job was even more dangerous than she had imagined, and it seemed the tables had just been turned on the hunter. For a second, she thought she should go, get far away from whatever nightmare she'd stumbled into. But she'd made Cormac promise to return to her, and she'd promised him that she'd stay. And she did want to hear his explanation, whatever it might be. She could always decide to leave then, if that's what needed to happen. God, I hope that doesn't need to happen. There was a knock at the door. Had he forgotten something? She yanked it open. But it wasn't Cormac. The woman from before, Branna, she thought he'd called her, was standing there, scowling, her eyes intense. Cormac's not here, Megan said. Branna pushed in anyway. She was short, but she was strong. Megan closed the door and set the salt shaker on the windowsill. What do you want? Since you ask, I want you to pack. Megan turned her head and looked at her through narrowed eyes. All the nerves and stomach-turning confusion from before had left her body, replaced by a new level of supreme annoyance. Cormac said this chick wasn't his girlfriend, so what the hell was her problem? I don't care what you want. Megan scowled and straightened her shoulders. I'm not leaving. Cormac told me to... I know what he told you, Branna said, tossing her long black hair over her shoulder. I didn't say I expected to get what I wanted. I rarely do. And I never do when a McConnell is involved. Megan swallowed and reassessed. Maybe she wasn't Cormac's girlfriend, but she could be his bitter, possessive ex. Was she some psycho, fatal attraction girl? Branna's face turned even more sour than before. She looked Megan up and down. I don't like it when he's unhappy. And he's unhappy. Megan didn't know what she was talking about, but it seriously pissed her off. And you think it's my fault he's unhappy? I've known him for all of 2 days, not even 2 days. Branna almost laughed. Oh, you're definitely making that dog miserable, whether you have any control over that. My point is, I don't want to see him hurt. You think he's going to get hurt? Megan's mind went to whomever it was who dumped a body on Cormac's doorstep, and she felt a flicker of fear before realizing that wasn't what Branna was talking about. Branna was talking about her. As if, with all the crazy-ass shit Cormac was clearly dealing with, she, Megan Walsh, would even register, let alone hurt him. I can't believe he'd want to spend a second in your presence, especially after all he's been through. If nothing else had gotten Megan's attention, that certainly did. What would any of Cormac's history have to do with her? For God's sake, she just met the guy. Branna stepped closer again, and her eyes narrowed. Know this. It would take more than a shrinking violet to deal with all of Cormac McConnell's shit. He needs an equal partner. Not you. Not a Podrick. Was that some regional slang? Whatever it meant, she could tell it wasn't a compliment. Cormac said he wanted to take her on as a partner because she was a stranger in the area. The logic seemed thin at the time. Now, after what happened moments ago, it sounded downright irrational. Was that what Branna was getting at? Did she know what Cormac was doing right now, and why? Still, Megan wasn't about to let this woman, whoever she was, push her around. For your information, I don't shrink. Not from anything. Well, not from anything except helping Cormac bury a mutilated body. Understand me, Branna said, raising her hand and pointing her finger at Megan. Cormac is emotionally stunted. That's not a very nice... Branna flexed her wrist and gave Megan her palm. His sole desire is vengeance. Once he has it, once he's caught his man, he'll have no more use for you. You'll never see him again. That's the truth. Megan swallowed the lump in her throat. Branna wasn't telling her anything she hadn't already told herself. So why did it hurt so bad to hear it confirmed? Why are you telling me this? She asked, and she was horrified to hear the quake in her voice. Branna made a scoffing sound. Not to be cruel, if you can believe that. Just to be honest. Do yourself a favor. Gather your things together and hit the road. She glanced at the windowsill as she took the door handle, then glanced up at Megan with a patronizing expression. And for the love of Danu, bring the salt when you go. You're not very popular around these parts. I will not be blamed for anything bad happening to you just because you were stupid. Then she opened the door, slammed it behind her, and was gone. What the fucking hell? Megan stared into the empty room, rehashing Branna's visit. How could she be unpopular? No one even knew who she was, and what was the freaking deal with the salt? Something weird was going on, weirder than what she'd already gathered. And whatever it was more than she needed to deal with at the moment. Hallucinations, cryptic warnings, freaky ex-girlfriend types, multiple dead bodies. Was Cormac into something illegal? Oh, shit. If she got swept up in a sting, she'd end up rotting away in a jail cell. There was no one in her life who'd be willing to bail her out. This Branna person was a bitch, for sure, but Megan still had a strange sense of gratitude for her visit because she'd definitely let her guard slip. She'd let herself get pulled in by Cormac's looks, his strength, the growing feeling of... connection. In doing so, she'd lost sight of everything the last 21 years had taught her. For Christ's sake, she'd seriously been considering partnering up with a guy who buried dead bodies in the woods without calling the cops. Fuck. She had to get out of there. She had to leave before he could come back and suck her in more deeply. She didn't want to do it. She had to do it. As painful as it was now, it would only get worse if she delayed. She glanced at the windowsill and saw the Fat Friar salt shaker. She still didn't know what the freaking deal was with all this talk about salt. But at least she could have the shaker as a memento of this weird experience. She could add it to her collection. A second later, it joined the snow globe, the Papagino's menu, and the hot dog keychain in her suitcase. And then she left. Chapter 11. Megan. Megan was having flashbacks to junior high gym class. Those days of being the only late bloomer surrounded by beautiful girls who filled out their bras, had legitimate pubes, and talked about giving head way before Megan knew what that meant. The only difference between then and now was that Megan wasn't hunched over in a locker room hiding from the beautiful people. At the moment, she was strung up and spread-eagled, her wrists and ankles bound by ropes and tied between two trees, while surrounded by five stunning women, all dressed in black. 2 hours earlier, she'd bailed on the rental cottage, not even leaving a note, and headed north. Getting back on track with her original plan seemed like the smartest thing she could do. Once she got to Canada, she could forget all about Cormac McConnell and rediscover a world that might be less interesting, but at least made sense. To get a good start on normal, she'd hitched a ride with a nice older lady who lectured her on the dangers of hitchhiking but took her as far as Koval, which didn't seem to be an actual town, but a stretch of more forested highway. From there, she walked until her feet hurt, and she found a sheltered area and some bushes off the edge of the road to take a nap. Sometime later, she heard the singing. As if in a trance, Megan rose and followed the music. It drew her in like a tractor beam, and she followed the sound, tripping along a well-worn path and into the trees like she was a junkie, following the promise of top-notch heroin. She tightened her grip on her suitcase and hadn't gone more than 100 feet when she hit a clearing and saw the source of the hypnotic sound. 5 women, dressed in black, standing in a circle, all holding hands and singing. "Welcome," said one of the women. She pulled her mouth into a smile that gave Megan a tingling sense of fear. "Please, join us." Over the years, Megan had developed a strong instinct for people and situations that required her to get the hell away and not look back. There had been her uncle's work buddy who came to the house to play cards every Friday. He always had a unique talent for entering the kitchen at the same time Megan went in looking for a snack. There was the party in 10th grade where a kid brought a gun, and the time she accidentally discovered her neighbor's basement pot farm. None of that came even close to her current predicament in the "you better run" department. But as much as Megan's feet twitched in her shoes, wanting to return to the road, her head leaned forward, pulling her body deeper into the clearing, which brought her to now. The hypnotic pull had disappeared, no longer needed now that she was tied to the trees and rendered immobile. Megan yanked and twisted against the ropes that bound her. "Let me go! Please!" "You came to us," one of the women said, "and now you want to leave?" "So impolite," another said, clicking her tongue. "And ungrateful," said another who tapped her fingers against her black leather-clad thigh. "But what more would you expect from a Padraig?" There was that word again. Megan felt a strange numbness flooding through her. No. Not again. It seemed like she'd been barely hanging on to consciousness for the last couple of days. Her vision blurred, and her muscles went limp. As the women closed in, she had a weird recollection of a show she'd seen on National Geographic about giant spiders. Jesus, these women were like beautiful black spiders, luring her in, trapping her, then anesthetizing her before they consumed her. How had they given her something without her knowing it? A tingling, sleepy sensation wriggled over her scalp and down her arms, but she vowed not to succumb. She promised Cormac she would stay awake. He made it sound important, like life or death. She hadn't understood at the time, but things were getting clearer. If she stood a chance of getting out of here alive, she had to fight it. "There's something familiar about her," one of the women said, as she dragged a finger down Megan's arm. "Do you sense that?"
"Familiar?" asked one of the other women as she stroked Megan's cheek.
"I don't know, but I can certainly feel the energy rolling off of her, can't you, sister?"
It practically overflows her."
"She can't expect us to resist her now," said one who, to Megan's horror, was kneeling at her feet.
"What the fuck? This isn't real."
It couldn't be. She had to be hallucinating. Megan looked up to the sky and did her best to stay conscious. She really should have listened to Cormac.
"She thinks of someone. A lover?" the one at her feet asked. "Oh, please, let it be a lover. It makes them so much more satisfying."
These things liked her thoughts? She could fix that. She focused on the most obnoxious earworm of all time and began to hum, hoping it made her less of a tasty treat.
"I'm Henry VIII, I am. Henry VIII, I am."
The women drew even nearer, if that was possible, and Megan felt their noses skimming across her skin as they drew in her scent. No, not her scent. Her essence. Little bits of her peeled away, even as she fought to keep herself intact, and she jerked and twisted her body, clenching her mind around the lyrics.
"I got married to the widow next door. She's been married 7 times before."
It wasn't working. Megan's back arched,
She clung to her spirit as they kept sucking it out of her. Fuck, they really were like spiders. They were going to suck her dry of all that made her, her. She didn't know how, but she knew that if she gave in, there'd be nothing left of her but an empty husk. And everyone was an Henry. Henry wouldn't take a Willie or a Sam. No, Sam. A loud, furious roar suddenly filled the forest. The women all whirled, turning their backs on Megan, and her body slumped forward, hanging by her wrists, as the anesthetizing veil slowly lifted. Megan only had the strength to raise her head as an enormous black dog burst into the clearing. Oh, fuck. It is as our sister said, one of the women said. The Kushi has taken sides with the enemy. To that, the beast growled low in its throat, the sound growing in intensity as it prowled forward, its head low and its lips curled back. Megan felt her flesh prickle and crawl, and for the life of her, she couldn't understand why these women didn't run. She'd run, if she wasn't tied to the trees. Let us finish what we started, said another of the women, holding her hand out in supplication to the beast. We'll be sure to leave the scraps for the dog. An even more sinister growl erupted from the beast, and he retracted his body as if it were a slingshot, gathering energy. A second later, he released, lunging forward. His teeth ripped into the woman's outstretched hand, tearing it clean from her wrist. Megan's stomach churned as the woman screamed and her four sisters howled with such a high-pitched keening that Megan thought of cicadas. The dog snarled, lunging at another woman. This time it was only a threat, but it did the trick. The women were flushed from the clearing like a flock of birds. In a flash, they were gone. Then the beast turned its red eyes on easy prey. Megan's stomach sank. She wrapped her fingers around the ropes, closed her eyes, and held on tight. It would all be over soon. God, please let it be over soon. She tried to calm herself with that prayer, but still a whimper slipped past her lips. She could hear the slow, menacing sound as the beast stalked closer, the predatory growl rumbling low in its chest, even the wet sound of a hungry mouth opening, its tongue licking over its teeth. And then a voice said, clear as day, Megan! Jesus! What the fuck?
Chapter 12. Cormac. Megan's eyes flew open, but Cormac couldn't take the time to contemplate her look of terror and surprise. He was too busy with his own fear, exasperation, anger, relief. There were too many emotions rolling through his mind, and it was all he could do not to release them on her. Why had she left the cottage when he told her quite plainly to keep her ass inside? Salt the door, he told her. Stay put, he told her. Stay awake. And what was she thinking coming into the woods? Megan stared straight ahead, her mouth hanging open, her eyes blinking like a barn owl's. Who? She whispered. What? Makushla. His whole body hummed with a loosely controlled energy. His gaze dropped from her beautiful grey-green eyes all the way down to her feet, checking for injuries. He pinched his lips together, more than satisfied with what he saw. Not only was she in one piece, she was damn near perfect. Nearly perfect. She's still a Pádraig, and there's no avoiding that. Where did that dog go? She jerked her arms against the ropes, trying to break free, as her gaze darted around the clearing. There was a giant dog, or a wolf. Probably a wolf. Cormac held up his hands, palms out, as if she were the dangerous thing. Calm down. I'll explain. Oh my God. She jerked one of her hands again, probably intending to put it to her mouth, but it only moved a fraction of an inch. Her eyes settled on him with a look of horrified realization. It's you. Isn't it? That was you. That was you before, too. When we found the first body. Her eyes were like saucers, and she bucked against the ropes. Get me out of here! Settle. I said I'd explain. Just listen. It's all right. But it wasn't all right. Christ. He'd almost lost her.
How could he have let this happen? Was he incapable of keeping anyone safe?
Cormac pulled a knife from his belt and she flinched. His eyes jerked to hers, pain slicing his heart at the realization that she thought he meant to hurt her.
Megan, I'm just going to cut the rope.
She sniffed and closed her eyes, nodding her head. He dropped down to a squat and sliced through the first rope that bound her right ankle. Then he unwrapped the coil and rubbed, soothing away the burn. He looked up. She was looking down at him, her curly hair falling forward, her eyes shining with tears, and the sad but beautiful sight nearly blinded him.
What are you? She whispered. What were those women?
He pinched his lips together, then freed her other ankle. When he stood, there was no more than a foot separating their bodies.
If I tell you, he said, pausing before he released her wrists, are you going to faint again?
She jutted out her chin and she blinked back the tears, though her body still trembled.
I don't faint.
He snorted and smiled. Her stubbornness was one of the things he was beginning to love most about her.
Wait, no, not love. Respect. And despite her foolishness, she deserved that. His respect and his honesty.
I'm Cushy, he said, saying the foreign word slowly. Cushy. He cut through the rope that bound her right wrist. You might know me better as Hellhound. She blinked, and her lips parted as if she'd heard the word before. He cut the last rope, and she reached out to steady herself against one of the trees.
You know of us?
He asked. She shook her head, her eyes still wide.
Those women, those things, were talking about you. They said you'd taken sides with the enemy.
Cormac sighed. Those women were Lanonshi. I told you to stay awake because they influence people's dreams. They suck them in, then live off their energy, and you are the enemy they were referring to. You're a Podrick.
Megan blinked and shook her head. What does that even mean?
It means human. He did his best to hide the disdain in his voice, or how, with just that one word, he'd emphasized the insurmountable difference between them. Megan's body slumped against the tree, as if she no longer had the strength to stand.
Your friend, Branna, called me that too. She said Podricks were all alike.
His head jerked up.
Branna? She said you needed an equal partner and not a Podrick.
Cormac took a quick step closer. Megan, when did you talk to Branna? She took a step back.
After you left.
I told you not to open the door. He ground out the words. Were his instructions really so hard to understand? They were going to have some serious problems if she continued to act so recklessly. She put her hands to her head.
Why did you leave? Was Branna behind that too?
She groaned and shook her head as if still trying to clear away the after effects of the Lanonshi.
You don't understand.
You got that right. I'd ask if you had any idea what a Lanonshi will do to a person, but I see you got a good taste of it firsthand. Now, why did you leave me? She bent over and put her hands on her knees.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Cormac exhaled in frustration. He wasn't going to get any answers out here. Come back to the cottage with me. He glanced around the woods. We should probably find some safer cover anyway. She straightened quickly and looked at him like he was insane.
You can't go back there.
Why not? She threw out one arm and pointed in the direction of town. Sort of.
You said whoever you're tracking left the body there to say that he knows where you are.
So? He cocked his head to the side.
What was she getting at? So?
Megan, I did my fair share of hiding when I was young. I don't like hiding. If he's going to come for me, I figure, great. Saves me the work of trying to find him. And I'll be ready.
You are insane.
Now she was staring at him like she really meant it. You think so? She folded her arms.
I am not going back there.
Yes, you are.
No.
She closed her eyes and shook her head.
I'm not.
You're not safe out here alone. You proved that handily. Stay with me.
She opened her eyes, and just as he thought she was going to continue with her refusal, maybe make him throw her over his shoulder and force her to go with him, she took a deep breath.
If I go, you'll explain the rest?
He nodded, though she had some of her own explaining to do.
I said I would.
She clenched her teeth, and he saw a final shudder run through her before she lifted her chin and looked him straight in the eye.
Then, fine.
He blinked in surprise because he could see how much that cost her. She was taking a risk staying with someone like him. When they first talked in the bar after leaving the clinic, her natural instinct had been to leave. Now she knew how right she had been. He was grateful for the second chance to come clean.
Thank you, he said on an exhale. Would you be willing to ride me?
Megan blinked and, fighting a horrified expression, shook her head.
Excuse me?
Only then did he hear his question the way she had. He played off the sexual innuendo as if he were none the wiser.
Would that be too terrifying?
He asked, pulling at the leather band that angled across his chest.
You can hold on to the strap, like a rein, you know? It's just that it's a long way back and I don't dare tilt you again. You barely survived it last time.
She swallowed hard, probably remembering, but continued to stare at him blankly.
Cormac continued, We can get there faster if I shift and you ride on top.
Megan's gaze dropped to the strap. Another second passed, then she lifted her chin, but her face went red.
I'd be willing to try.
Okay then, he said, smoothing his hands over her hair.
He lifted her wrist to his nose and inhaled deeply.
Close your eyes.
I don't have to,
she said, straightening her shoulders.
This made Cormac's own body go on alert. Then it went warm and prideful. She was brave. So brave.
He doubted there was another Podrick on the planet who would willingly face a Kushi, particularly during its transformation. He kissed her forehead, then took several steps back. He felt that swell of pride in her grow stronger when she refused to look away, even as he clenched his teeth and his face morphed. He pulled back his lips in a grimace, then fell onto all fours. He braced against the pain as his ribcage expanded, arching his neck, then shaking his head as black wiry fur exploded from his back. His ears grew pointed, flattening against his massive head. A thick tail extended behind him. His teeth grew and elongated from behind his lips until he could no longer hide them, leaving Megan in the presence of the beast that, moments earlier, had sent 5 Lannon Shi scattering into the brush. The transformation complete, a red haze filtered over Cormac's vision, and the hellhound stood there, heaving in a human's presence. It bared its teeth and leaned forward, as tall as Megan, and touched its nose to hers. It snarled its greeting. Misunderstanding, Megan backed up and gripped the rough bark of the tree. Her body was flushed in the deepest pink, and she trembled.
Nice doggy?
Cormac froze, then blinked. Then he sat back on his haunches and laughed, or at least what felt like a laugh. From Megan's perspective, it must have sounded like he had something caught in his throat. She moved slowly to the side, inching toward her suitcase, which had been dropped or tossed a dozen feet away. Cormac watched her, holding still, giving her time. Hopefully, giving her confidence that he wouldn't make any sudden movements. She reached down for her suitcase, still moving cautiously, then she raised her hand to him. Cormac walked up to her and bumped his snout against her palm. Megan stroked her hand over the top of his head, following the groove in his skull, pulling a low vibration of pressure from his chest, which only grew louder when she scratched behind his ears. She laughed, and he leaned into her. Then she slid her hand over his angular shoulder, finding the leather strap now buried in his coarse fur.
He lowered himself to the ground. She hitched her skirt up and straddled his back, squeezing him with her thighs. And damn, if Cormac didn't like that even more than her caress. He gave a huff of approval, and then they were off.
Chapter 13. Megan. They arrived at the cottage under the cover of darkness and by way of the backyard so not to be seen by the other renters. Megan dismounted. She had to squeeze past Cormac's large body to get to the door, and she did so without looking at him too closely. The dark had helped on their journey, so had closing her eyes. As she turned the key, she looked over her shoulder to see Cormac ready to follow her in. She pushed the door open wide, then watched with bated breath. He tested the floorboards with his front paw, then walked tentatively, as if putting the pad of each foot down on broken glass. "Not used to being indoors like that?" she asked. Cormac raised his eyes to her, then huffed out a breath that resembled a sarcastic rebuke, if that were possible. At this point, she assumed everything was possible. "Okay, I'll take that as a yes. Does that also mean you're gonna, like, change back now?" It surprised her that she could see Cormac, the beautiful man, and Cormac, the terrifying creature, as one and the same. If she thought about it, in changing so suddenly from one to the other, he had done nothing more than change his clothes. And that thought was confirmed by one look in his eyes. Sure, they were glowing red, but in them was the same heated intensity she'd seen in his gray ones. It felt important that she should communicate this to him somehow, so she stepped closer, saying as casually as she could, "I noticed there's a coffee maker in the kitchen. I could make us some coffee or get you a bowl of water or whatever." Cormac snorted and lowered his head. "Nothing? Okay, right. Good. I'll just get changed." She pulled an oversized t-shirt from her suitcase, then made a controlled walk for the bathroom before swiftly closing the door behind her. Once alone, she grasped the edge of the sink and stared into her own eyes. She looked more shaken up than she expected. She thought she had been putting up a better front. "Okay," she said as she slapped her hands on the sink, then proceeded to strip off her clothes. "You've got this. You've seen him like this before, and you know how sweet he was with you afterward. And sexy, don't forget, sexy." On an exhale, she pulled on her nightshirt. It nearly hung to her knees. "He is good, not scary. He took you to the doctor. He likes cheese curds." Then she shook out her hands, threw open the bathroom door, and announced, "Okay." Her body slumped with a release of adrenaline when she saw Cormac, the man, sitting on the side of the bed, staring down at his boots, looking chagrined.
"I'm so sorry, Makusla," he said.
"Sorry for what?" she asked, trying to sound nonchalant. She didn't want him to know how badly she was freaked, but there was no hiding from him. He could probably hear how fast her heart was still beating. "You're sorry for getting us home in one piece? How dare you?" Cormac didn't laugh. He continued to stare at his boots. "Hey, where did your clothes go when you, she asked. "How did you get them back?"
"They don't go anywhere. I didn't get them back. They're just an illusion."
Megan's eyes moved over his broad shoulders and solid chest, down to his thickly muscled thighs.
"An illusion?"
"Aye."
"You mean you're really naked? Now?"
"That's what I said."
"But..." She stepped closer and ran her hand along the leather strap that crossed his chest.
She'd been clinging to it for the last 20 minutes and never questioned its integrity. It felt like leather, buttery smooth on one side and rough underneath. Then she slid her finger inside the collar of his t-shirt and wondered how to undress an already naked man. Cormac grabbed her wrist and pulled her away from his chest.
"It's a good trick, eh? I can even put money in my pocket and it doesn't fall to the floor."
It was definitely a good trick, and she'd seen quite a few that day.
"Megan."
She nodded. She'd asked him to explain, and he said he would. But something in his tone made her suddenly want to put this off.
He could only have one of two things to talk about. He was either going to say that this didn't make sense and that they should part ways now before things got too weird between them, or he was going to rip her a new one for not following instructions and nearly getting herself killed. Hadn't she been through enough for the last, what, 30 hours? Had it only been that?
I'm exhausted,
she said, faking a yawn. Could we sleep first? Talk in the morning? He exhaled and, instead of pushing her, nodded. I'm going to need to get up early and make a report to the local Dana clan. We can talk when I get back. Do you mind if I take one of the blankets? Why? To sleep on the floor. Is that what you normally do? What did she know? Maybe he preferred to sleep as a dog in front of the fire. Or was it that he simply had no interest in sleeping with her? No, not usually, he said. So there was her answer. His earlier kiss and his holding her after her shower hadn't meant as much as she thought. He wasn't interested in her other than to keep her alive. Then a thought came to her. It was his bed. And he'd been through a lot in the last several hours. Or more like, she'd put him through a lot. Maybe she should be the one making the sacrifice. Would it be impolite if she didn't offer to take the floor herself? She was certainly used to that sort of thing. Over the last few years, she'd slept on plenty floors. Couches, back seats, truck stop benches. But I will, Cormac added resignedly, if that makes you more comfortable. Megan's heart skipped a beat. He was making the sacrifice for her. He thought she'd want him on the floor. As a general rule, Megan avoided men in beds. In her experience, nothing good ever came from the combination. But nothing about this felt the same as any time before. How could it? She wanted Cormac McConnell. More of him, anyway. She was taking too long to respond, so he reached for the extra blanket that was folded at the foot of the bed. She stepped forward quickly, and he stopped, mid-lean. It wouldn't make me more comfortable, she said. Her heart squeezed at the sound of her own voice. God, she was really going to do this. We can share the bed. It's not like anything has to happen, right? We can just sleep. His head jerked up, and his dark eyebrows hit his hairline. You'd share a bed with me after what you've seen? Is there a reason why I shouldn't? She asked, then mentally answered, only like a million. Only about a million, Cormac said. She snorted and moved closer to where he sat on the edge of the mattress. He stopped her progress with his hand at her shoulder. I'm attracted to you, Megan. You should know that before you agree to share my bed. She nearly laughed at the irony. Plenty of guys said things like this to get her into bed. Cormac was saying it to keep her out. He didn't make sense. But then, not much of this did. She slid her hand along his jaw and cupped his cheek. He leaned into it, then pressed his nose to her wrist, inhaling. He did that a lot. He wasn't sure why. Your touch, he said. It feels amazing. I'm barely touching you. And that's good because it's also dangerous. How is this dangerous? She asked, dragging her thumb through the scruff at the edge of his beard. He lifted his head. I can usually keep a firm hold on my human form, but every time you touch me, my control wants to peel away. Scratch that. Every time you look at me, I'm weak. You make me weaker. That's why it took a while to lose the beast when we got back here. He leaned forward and whispered confidentially. It likes you. Megan let all of those words sink in and wondered at them. There was nothing weak about Cormac McConnell. He was all hard muscle and flexing sinew, without a scrap of fat on him. He was so strong, one look at him had those hideous women scurrying into the woods. Also, if the beast liked her, did that mean Cormac did as well? She pinched her lips together and said, Maybe we should go to sleep? Cormac leaned back, and her hand fell from his face. She felt his eyes on her as she crawled under the covers, giving him an unavoidable peek at her bare thighs. when Cormac's t-shirt suddenly vanished and a hungry growl rumbled out of his chest. She pushed down the tremor of fear and smiled to herself, remembering the moment in the bar when she agreed to stay. "For once in your life," she thought, "you've done something right. Something amazing. Do not fuck this up, Megan, or I'm going to seriously kick your ass."
Chapter 14. Cormac. Cormac lay in his bed, his glamoured pants still on, and stared at the dark ceiling, mentally retracing his steps. Yesterday he'd been going about his business, following his last lead, hot on the scent of fresh blood, expecting to find death at the end of that trail. Now he was in bed with a woman. And not just any woman. Megan Walsh. The hound bayed dolefully at his inaction and cried out in frustration. "Ours. Claim. Protect." Thankfully, only Cormac could hear him. Cormac threw an arm over his eyes and pushed down deep the urge to claim her, to really make her his. The rushing sound in his head had mellowed a bit since his and Megan's first meeting, but lying beside her was kicking up the storm. He tried to relax. She was safe now. At least, she was safer in his bed than she was anywhere else. But he could never lose sight of the fact his parents had been slaughtered in their home, in their own kitchen, inches from where he hid in a cupboard with his hand held tightly over his little brother's mouth. Cormac could still feel the tears collecting along the length of his fingers as they fell from Madigan's eyes. No place was truly safe. And if he lost control of the beast when Megan was too close... "How in the hell did you find me today?" she asked. The sudden sound of her voice made him suck in a breath. He rolled toward her and found her on her back, staring up at the ceiling. He would have thought the answer to her question was obvious. But when she turned toward him, he touched his nose to signify it. "Your scent is recorded so deep within me. I could find you anywhere." Even in the dark, he could see the mixture of expressions that played across her face. Pride, pleasure, awareness, concern. He understood. He didn't know how or what he was supposed to feel, either. For now, all that mattered was that he had her here, in his bed. And she was safe. For now. She blinked once, slowly, as if holding back a tear.
"Why are Podrakes the enemy?"
"I thought you wanted to sleep," he said, and without really meaning to, he reached out and tucked a dark spiraled lock behind her ear.
"I guess I'm not as tired as I thought."
He hesitated for a second, thinking how to explain without offending her too much. Then he took a breath and turned on his bedside lamp. "Human beings are called Podrigs for St. Podrick, patron saint of Ireland. There are legends about him expelling all the snakes from the island." "There are legends about him expelling all the snakes from the island, aye?" "Well, they weren't the only thing he was hell-bent on getting rid of."
"You?"
"All of the she." When he saw Megan's confusion, he added, "Fairy folk, we come in many forms. Cushi, like me. Lanon she, like the ones who had you tied to the tree. Banshee, they're the heralds of death."
"I've heard of banshees before."
He nodded. "There's the Dina she. Anyway, St. Podrick and his followers started a society. I don't know what they called themselves originally, but centuries ago they began calling themselves the Black Castle, which is a structure that was built at the port in Wicklow where, one legend has it, St. Podrick first arrived on the island. The Black Castle continues St. Podrick's mission of expelling the Sidhe from Ireland. It'll never work, of course, but over the years, many did leave and settled in North America. In the areas that became Boston, Chicago, Milwaukee, and then in smaller scattered pockets to the west, like the North Shore and the Boundary Waters. We like to be near rivers and lakes. The more water, the better. She gave a visible shiver, and he drew his eyebrows together in a question.
"I hate water," she explained.
"You said that before when I carried you out of the woods the first time. How does anyone hate water?"
"Easy. You have an uncle who thinks the best way to teach a 5-year-old to swim is to throw her off the end of a dock. I couldn't touch."
I nearly drowned before he decided I wasn't going to float. The hound lunged forward as if her uncle was right there in the room with them. For the man's sake, it was a good thing he wasn't. Anyway, Cormac pulled himself together and continued with his history lesson. Just as we have survived, so has the Black Castle. Recently, they brought their cause to this continent. Because they hunt us, I hunt them. Megan didn't respond right away. She seemed to need time to digest all he'd shared, and he didn't rush her. Eventually, she asked, "And what's the deal with the salt?" "It's not a foolproof defense, but any she will think twice before crossing it. It burns, and if it gets on your skin, you can lose consciousness for a bit. But iron is worse." "Going back to what you said before, am I safe from this Black Castle person?"
"Before, yes. Now that you're associated with me, you're more vulnerable. But I swear, they will not touch you."
"And when you left, you told me to salt the door."
Cormac didn't respond. He didn't need to.
"So I'm not safe from your own kind either, right?"
"So long as they know you're with me, really with me, you'll be fine. Though it will take some time for them to get used to the idea."
Then he took her hand and lifted it, holding it between their chests. He was done talking about these things. There was only one thing he wanted to know.
"What did Branna say to you? Is she the reason you left?"
Megan squirmed, wishing it were still dark in the room and he couldn't see her blush.
"She said you needed an equal partner. I proved today that I'm not that."
Cormac raised his hand and brushed his knuckles over her temple, trying to soothe her. She went on.
"I already knew I didn't have the skills to assist a regular bounty hunter, but you're not exactly that now, are you?"
"No, I'm not."
She nodded, but he could still see the pain in her eyes.
"So there's no way I can actually help you. I think I knew that deep down. Even before what happened in the woods, or before I knew the truth. That's why I decided to leave."
"But I think you can help me."
"But how? What good am I? You should have another Cushi help you. I think Branna wants the job."
"She's not Cushi."
"She's something though, right?"
He kissed the knuckles on her hand.
"She's a Pooka, a shapeshifter. Usually she shows up as a black rabbit, so if you see her hopping around, think again before you call her a cute little bunny."
His lips twitched, fighting a grin. Megan blinked once, then her eyes went wide as she put two and two together.
"If she's not your girlfriend, who is she to you?"
"She's my oldest ally. That doesn't mean she's friendly."
"But if you asked, she'd help you. And she could do the job better than me. At least she could defend herself if you ran into trouble."
Cormac's idea of how Megan could help had seemed far-fetched when he'd been pacing outside the clinic. But it was more plausible now in light of recent events. It was time to let her in on it. He pushed up on one elbow, and the sheet pooled around his waist. Megan's eyes followed it down.
Christ, her gaze affected him just as much as her touch. He was already swelling, and before he knew what was happening, his glamoured pants slipped away, leaving him naked beneath the sheet. "Focus," he thought. "Control." "Ours," whined the beast deep inside of him. "Claim. Protect."
Cormac tucked the blankets tighter around his hips and cleared his throat, preparing to answer her concerns.
"Remember how that doctor said your rash could be a reaction to something on that hilltop?"
He paused, and Megan's eyebrows drew together.
"You're not allergic to me, obviously, so I'm wondering if you might be allergic to this latest Black Castle, or to something he wears. I swear, this guy has been doing something to mask his scent. Maybe your body is reacting to it."
He could see her mind processing, so he pressed on.
"To be clear, I don't want your help actually bringing him down. But if you're allergic to something about him, you could help me identify him."
"I don't think I understand."
Cormac exhaled in a rush through his nose. That's why I've had no success in finding them. The Black Castle is a large, well-organized group. As soon as I get hot on the trail, they switch out their representative and a new one takes his place. I've got to discover a new scent, and it takes me in a completely different direction. It's been like chasing a fucking ghost. Whoever did these last two murders, he's new. I'm just figuring out his scent. But between my nose and your sensitive skin... Megan's expression flattened. He knew it wasn't a great plan, but at least it was something. Maybe he needed to do a better job of explaining. Your rash flared on that hilltop. Then it got better. Right up until a second body landed on our doorstep. Remember? I told you, your neck was getting redder right after I opened the door. Megan stared at him for a long second and, speaking of red, her face was pink and growing more so. She gave her head a little shake. So all you want is for me to be your canary? What? Canary, like in the coal mines. She was angry. Cormac could see it in her face, and he could feel it emanating from her body. I'm not... Megan interrupted him, her anger slipping into something else, something sadder. She started rambling, sounding more like she was talking to herself than to him. A stupid, insignificant bird is brought into the mines in case the carbon monoxide gets too much. The bird's great talent, she said, letting the sarcasm fly, is that it can suffocate faster than a man. My great talent is that I get a rash? Well, I... He didn't understand why she was getting so upset. He'd braced for her to laugh, not to yell. Megan stared at him for a second, as if waiting for him to rethink his answer. When he didn't, she turned her face away from him. Christ, this is humiliating. Megan, talk to me. She turned onto her side to face him. Cormac, don't you think this is a little embarrassing for me? I wanted to be a real help to you, not this. Branna was right. I am pathetic. I should go. Cormac pushed her to her back and he rolled on top. It was a mistake. He'd forgotten that his pants had vanished. She turned her head and closed her eyes. Earlier, I was right to go. I've got my own life to get back to. I had a plan. You know, before I met you, I was going somewhere. You also said you had nowhere to stay once you got there. Megan turned her head to face him, and she opened her eyes. She blinked back the moisture, looking for all the world like she wished she'd never shared so much. Funny, given Cormac wanted to know so much more. It's dangerous in the woods, he said, hoping that reminder would make her stay, at least until morning. I know that, she snapped. What happened today? Stay with me and you won't face that ever again. What do you mean? She asked, her tone incredulous. That I won't get the life sucked out of me by the Hoover sisters? Or that a rabbit won't be back to tell me you can do so much better? You can't keep the world at bay, Mac. No one can. Believe me, I know that better than most. I know that too, he said, his own temper rising. My family knows that. My parents were the first to die when the Black Castle came to the North Shore. Then the Black Castle proceeded to destroy my entire family. I made it out, but I haven't been home in a long time. I won't go back until I've avenged them. Megan's face slipped into that look of sympathy he'd seen on so many others. The one he hated. The one that made everything worse. They destroyed your entire family? Megan's voice broke on the last word, and Cormac felt it in his gut. I was the oldest of four, all heirs to the Cushy seat. You mean, you're like a king? He shook his head. More like a chieftain, but I'm not worthy of even that anymore. Not until my family is avenged, and maybe not even then. But you could go back, take your place. If we found the killer, ended it, you could go back to your home. She was sounding excited, hopeful on his behalf.
but it wasn't contagious. I don't know, but it won't be possible before then.